Dan Cassidy here. As we have been highlighting, we are back now with the next installment of our Talking Markets podcast series right here on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Today's conversation will focus on the current landscape for equity investors. This will include a look at the opportunity set for dividend equities and how to effectively achieve geographic portfolio diversification, among some other topics top of mind for equity investors. Joining me here for the conversation at our 1285 podcast studio in New York. Glad to welcome Dan Paris from our partners at Federated Hermes. Dan serves as Senior Vice President, Senior Portfolio Manager, and Head of Income and Value Group. Dan joined Federated in 2002 and has 26 years of investment experience. I will point out as well that Dan is also the author of several equity investing books. This includes Getting Back to Business, The Dividend Imperative, The Strategic Dividend Investor, and his most recent book from 2024, The Ownership Dividend. So with that, Dan, it's great to be with you here at the table today. Thank you for dropping by and for spending some time with our advisors and listeners. Great to have you.
Dan, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely. So, Dan, there's a lot going on in the markets at the moment, a lot for equity investors to assess, digest. Curious, from your perspective, how would you characterize the current environment for equity investors? And that may range from valuations, risks, and even return outlook.
Yeah. So I think that we're at a period, and I can feel this in my own business, that of just tremendous uncertainty. That is, there's always uncertainty in making a stock decision. You know, technically, the academics refer to it as decision-making under conditions of uncertainty. That's called what we normal people would call life. But when you frame it in a for finance, that's the fancy term they use. And the degree of uncertainty, I suppose, rises and falls over the decades and for individuals and where they are in their stages in lives and for businesses, et cetera. But it does seem that for pretty much everyone, investors, advisors, home offices, corporations, regulators, we are at a period of peak uncertainty. That's just what has happened. And so I happen to oversee a mandate which is kind of specific. It's narrow. It's dividend focused, as you know. But I think that in this period of uncertainty, having a narrow mandate, whatever it may be, it doesn't have to be the specific one that I do, but having a really narrow focus, whether it's in an advisory practice or an investment manager, that is beneficial just because you are able to screen out more of the noise. And I think that we kind of as dividend-focused investors, or again, any other type of extremely narrow focus, are better able to navigate, to explain, to manage, to communicate, to position what we do in this period of peak uncertainty. So I'm glad that I have a narrow mandate. And I think, again, those guests who I'm sure you've had on the show who have trying to figure out the 60-40 equation or market strategists, I certainly don't envy them right now.
So with that, just looking at the opportunity set for dividend equities today, what would you emphasize to our listeners, our clients?
Underneath the surface, I wouldn't even call it the surface, the deep surface of uncertainty, there's some very green shoots for this particular narrow mandate. And that is that with all of the oxygen sucked out of the room by a handful of securities, the rest of the S&P 500, whether you refer to it as the S&P 490, 493, 495, whatever, everything X those, you know, handful of leading tech companies, they have gotten a lot less love over the last 5 years. We noticed this narrowing of the market, which increases our opportunity set, starting actually just before COVID, 2019, so coming up on 6 years, where all this attention's focused on a handful of securities. It's great if you own them. It's been a great ride, blah, blah, blah. That's wonderful. I wish you all the next NVIDIA for in your holiday stocking, et cetera. But for narrowly focused non-large tech investors, it's the opportunity set, the hunting ground, has actually improved. Even though the market kind of melts up and continues to do so, led by those, the ability to focus on a particular mandate, whatever it may be, and to kind of hit your marks has actually gotten a little bit easier over the last 6 years. We have in the portfolios that we oversee actually have more securities, a little bit more variety, more diversification, as you referenced, in them than we might have, say, in 2016 or 17 or 15, when dividend-focused investing was oh so popular, and the opportunity set was narrower. So don't tell anyone, but again, among the 490, there are plenty of not plenty, because again, we tend to really focus on higher dividends, and the U.S. market has a yield of 1%. So it is a framed opportunity set, but it's actually larger than it's been for us in about a decade. So we're pretty pleased with that.
Looking beyond our borders, what would you identify as being the advantages of geographic diversification? How should clients be thinking about that when making investment decisions? And where are you looking to at the moment for opportunity?
Yeah, I wish clients would at least, while we have to respect the SEC definitions and the Morningstar definitions, I wish clients would look beyond where a company is listed and its stock and consider where its business is. So there is a carbonated beverage company founded in the southern state of Georgia about a century ago that's very popular. But is it a U.S. company? Look at the profits, mostly outside the U.S. There's a ex-cigarette company. It's really now a heat-not-burn and reduce-risk and nicotine delivery company that split off from another nicotine delivery company that is based in Switzerland, but it's a U.S.-listed company. It really doesn't sell much product in the United States other than some nicotine pouches. They use a cowboy as their totem. The large pharmaceutical companies headquartered in London and Paris, they live and die by what goes on in Washington, D.C. So these questions of where is the opportunity outside the United States, inside the United States, we as dividend investors are focused on the cash flows ultimately that our clients are receiving. And so for us, the traditional definition of international and domestic by listing is somewhat artificial, somewhat misleading. We have to play by the rules. So happen to have various products that are characterized as international stocks, domestic stocks, this portfolio, that portfolio, play by the rules. But analytically, it is much more the case that we're looking at where the cash flows are generated for dividends to support dividends. And our portfolios are have significant weightings in these global multinationals that are based outside the United States. They tend to be more dividend friendly. We also tend to draw upon Canadian companies, which are whether they have assets in the United States or not, and most of them do, they tend to be U.S. facing because the U.S. is growing quite nicely. But corporate governance in Canada is very good, and it's a reasonable place to kind of harvest dividends for U.S. investors. There are other pockets outside the United States which are very dividend friendly, Brazil, for instance, but it's also very, very volatile. Brazil has a corporate legal culture which is crazy dividend friendly. Love it, except the problem is it's in Brazil, and the currency and the general economy can be booming or busting. So there, dividend investing in for U.S. investors falls into two types. You have in the U.S., we talk about the ability and inclination of management to pay and increase the dividend over time. For the U.S. companies, the inclination part is hard because a lot of U.S. corporations just want to buy back their stock. They don't want to pay dividends. For the non-U.S. companies, we ask the exact same question, the ability and inclination of management to pay and increase the dividend. Well, the inclination part is good. Most non-U.S. corporations of size are very much on board with the message, but it's their ability question, how's business doing? So we are global conceptually, but yes, for the convenience of the SEC, for the convenience of UBS, for the convenience of all of our distribution partners, we follow the rules, and international products have international listings and domestic products have mostly but not exclusively U.S. listings.
Timely that you're here, Dan, as we're coming off of the Q2 earnings season, maybe a bit past 95% of reporting at this point. Any observations, takeaways from this past season?
Yeah, again, for the non-tech space, which is where we operate, with one exception, meh meaning not so good, not so bad, just kind of meh in the middle. The one exception is that aggregate electricity demand, not just AI demand but and data center demand, but aggregate electricity demand has finally kind of broken through its plateau that it had been in for several decades. And we are seeing mid to high single digit dividend growth and CapEx, for the utilities, capital expenditures drive ultimate dividend growth. And we see high single-digit CapEx growth and mid to high single-digit dividend growth in the utilities for the first time in decades. That kind of stands out in the results of the second quarter. For the rest of the economy, it's okay. It's not booming. It's not in any way a bust, but the utilities do stand out. And keep in mind, the utilities are just a 2-3% of the S&P 500. They're significantly more part of our portfolios. But you know, it's from a dividend perspective, it's a natural harvesting ground for our type of investment style.
And then thematically speaking, anything excite you at the moment? Do you have any sector preferences that you would want to share with us?
Our sector weights go up and down. The dividend opportunity weights move around a little bit, but not much. Not much. I think what excites me the most is your first question, or my answer to your first question, which is narrow mandate, cash focused, crazy uncertain times, rinse and repeat. That is, I am very comfortable doing what I'm doing and the team is doing, delivering a high and rising income stream in crazy uncertain times. And if those times become less uncertain and there's a clearer glide path to economic development with less questions being asked and less uncertainty, then, you know, a lot of people will move into, you know, other types of investments and so forth. But we are well suited towards uncertain times and investors who are, shall we say, maybe cautious by nature.
Getting into your investment process a bit further, can you, with their financial advisors, walk them through the mechanics of the portfolios you manage and speak to how they're constructed to deliver income?
Sure. So the basic concept for all of them is combining a balance of current yield and dividend growth. The U.S. market has a yield of 1%. We have yields that are well north of that, depending on the product, SMA, fund, ETF, international, domestic, global, et cetera. But they generally have, you know, four handles on them. Some have high threes. And those, that makes the dividend growth part of the job harder. If you have a, call it broadly speaking, a 4% yield in a 1% yielding market, growing the dividend off of that high base is where we're spending all of our time. And it comes back to that ability and inclination of management to pay and increase the dividend phrase that I mentioned earlier. But the ability part in a meh economy, some part, at least the non-tech part of the economy, is hard. And that's where we're spending our time trying to make sure that we have companies that can grow over time their dividend. Not all of them do. But at the portfolio level, we are looking for, inflation offsetting dividend growth. That comes down to basic fundamental analysis, business analysis, which I'm sure all of your guests talk about their fundamental analysis. Mm-hmm. The slight difference, but it's an important one, is that it's fundamental analysis, not necessarily targeted at the stock price. Oh, this is the target price. This is the multiple that we think. No, it's really, really focused on what can they. Is the business profitable? How much capital do they need? How much excess capital do they have? What are the growth parameters of the business? What kind of cash return can an investor expect for their capital outlay in a tangible return, not a share repurchase, but in an actual dividend to the investor? And that's what we end up with, is really a five-year dividend growth forecast for all of our companies. You can see the yield. The yield is visible every day. It changes every day with prices moving up and down and the current, whatever the current dividend is. But the value add is in forecasting dividend growth. And then if it's a real simple math exercise of blending, not really simple, but it is a, the math is simple, the portfolio construction is more complicated, but you're really just combining dividend yield plus dividend growth, both at the security level and at the portfolio level, to create an outcome for the client, which is very cash rich.
Well, appreciate the transparency, Dan, around your process. Before we close out, any final thoughts, takeaways, anything you would want to reinforce to our listeners?
Yeah, again, we're here. We've been here for 5,000 years. Dividend investing is in the sense of putting cash capital out and expecting a cash return on one investment is as old as Sumerian civilization and as old as any type of business that you or I or the listeners might be involved in. The U.S. stock market operates a little bit differently. I consider it anomalous. That's the theme of the books that you kindly mentioned at the top of the hour, that in the last 30 or 40 years where the U.S. stock market got stripped of its income stream and replaced it with buybacks is, I think, historically anomalous. Our business model kind of predates that, and I would argue postdates it, that I think that we are poised for what I refer to as the return of the cash nexus, where once again, minority investors, that is non-controlling investors, putting capital at stake, making it available to corporations, will expect a cash return in the form of a dividend going forward. We've seen a number of tech companies begin to introduce dividends. Interest rates are not where they were. They were very, very low for a long period of time. They're not anymore. That's also going to, I think, lead in the direction of the return of the cash nexus. Good news for dividend investors, more dividends, more opportunities. Good news for non-dividend investors, they're going to start to get dividends anyhow.
Well, Dan, very generous with your time. Thank you for making us a stop with your journey today and for sharing with our listeners, our clients, insights into dividend equity investing. So great catching up with you, and hope we can do it again at some point.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights, at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG, member FINRA SIPC.